You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Robin O'Brien's daughter Tori had a dangerous reaction to eggs, Robin did more than just call a doctor. She became a champion of food safety and founded a group called Allergy Kids. Now she's written a book that takes an investigative look at the food risks facing us today. The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It, is published by Broadway Books, and it brings her to our show. Hello, Robin.
Thanks so much for having me.
What happened to your daughter?
We know it was over scrambled eggs 3 years ago that she had an allergic reaction. And, you know, prior to that, I hadn't been particularly sensitive to the whole food allergy world and that issue as it was growing and the increasing attention that was being paid to it by the press. And suddenly I found my daughter having an allergic reaction to something as simple as an egg.
And she hadn't had allergic reactions to eggs before?
No, she hadn't. And she's the youngest of my four children. And, you know, the older kids had been perfectly fine. And so my first reaction was, you know, what has changed suddenly in our food supply that is making food such a threat to children?
Did you ever find out what it was in the eggs that did cause that reaction?
Well, interestingly, as I began to learn about food allergies, I learned that a child with a food allergy considers food proteins foreign, and the body launches an attack against food proteins. And so my questioning began, and I said, you know, are there foreign proteins that have recently been introduced into our food? And as a mother of four with a background in finance, I had helped manage, you know, $20 billion in assets prior to settling into motherhood. And the research wonk in me took hold. And I was absolutely stunned to learn that beginning in 1994, we began to engineer foreign proteins into the U.S. food supply in order to enhance profitability for the food industry. And that governments around the world, because those food proteins had never been proven safe, decided not to introduce them into their food supply.
And what had been introduced into eggs?
Well, interestingly, eggs here in the U.S., it doesn't matter what you feed a chicken, that egg is just simply labeled an egg. However, in Europe, for example, if you are feeding the chickens genetically modified corn, which contains these new proteins, these new food proteins like insecticidal proteins that have been engineered into corn to enhance their profitability in the field, if chicken is fed that corn, it has to be labeled both on the chicken and on the egg. And so here in the U.S., you know, we have much lesser regulations, lighter laws, you know, in terms of labeling. And so, you know, we just simply weren't informed that that egg might contain foreign proteins.
Didn't the New York Times report recently that there have been a lot of allergy false alarms? Doctors say that misdiagnosed food allergies appear to be on the rise, and many families are needlessly avoiding certain foods and spending hundreds of dollars on costly non-allergenic supplements.
Yeah, exactly. And because my background is finance, and I always let numbers tell their own story because this is obviously such an emotionally charged issue, the Centers for Disease Control recently reported there was a 265% increase in the rate of hospitalizations related to food allergies, and that's not a mother overreacting. That's children checked into ER.
Mm-hmm. How did your family react when you became something of an activist for the food health cause?
Well, as I share in The Unhealthy Truth, the introduction is called An Unlikely Crusader. I was not raised to be this mother out in front. I come from a conservative family in Texas, and, you know, I had traded the briefcase for a diaper bag to stay home with my children. And yet, as I learned about the recent engineering of the U.S. food supply, and as I stopped and I thought, you know, we've allowed these foreign food proteins into things as true as milk, and that in 1994 we began to engineer this foreign protein. It found its way into the milk supply. And as I began to ask questions, you know, is a child with a milk allergy, is he allergic to conventional milk protein, or is he allergic to the synthetic milk protein that was introduced in 1994? And there were no answers. And as I began to continue to ask these questions, and there were just these continuous, you know, black holes in terms of getting these answers, I felt that I had to turn to mothers overseas, to research overseas, to see what government overseas were doing. And it was stunning to learn this. And as a mother of four, I simply felt compelled to move forward. It hasn't always been easy. As I share in The Unhealthy Truth, I've received cease and desist letters. There have been legal threats. Again, I am married to a remarkable man. And together we sat down one day and I just said, you know, if I don't do this for my four children, who will? and I felt that it was vital that mothers here in the United States get the same information that mothers around the world have already had for the last 15 years.
So these allergies are not showing up, some of the, because there are children who will just be allergic to things. There always have been adults as well. But you're talking about allergies that are the direct result of changes in the food supply? And would that not be the case in Europe where milk, certain hormones are not put into milk and where there's less genetically modified food?
The studies have never been done. And because the studies have never been done, there's no way to say one way or the other. What's interesting is that according to the Japanese health minister, when this stuff was introduced 15 years ago, he simply said, we will watch the American children and we will see what happens. And today, one in three American kids now has autism, allergies, ADHD, or asthma. It's stunning what's happening to this generation of children. Sadly, as I mentioned in the book, they have earned the title Generation RX. And when you step back and again look at the numbers and you realize that 90% of the world's ADHD medication is prescribed to the American children, and we only represent 4% of the population, these are stunning statistics, and again, they speak for themselves.
Well, there are all sorts of wild statistics out there. Peanut butter has become a big issue, but Dr. Nicholas Christakis, an internal medicine doctor and professor at Harvard Medical School, in a recent column in the British medical journal BMJ, pointed out that about 3.3 million Americans are allergic to nuts, even more, 6.9 million are allergic to seafood, but of 30 million hospitalizations each year, just 2,000 are due to food allergies, and about 150 people die annually from serious allergic food reactions, which is about the same number of people killed by bee stings and lightning strikes combined.
A lot of those statistics, especially that last one that you highlighted of 150 kids, that is dated. I think it's back from like 2000 or 2002. The other point that I highlight in my book, which again, to me as a financial analyst, is incredibly important, is who is funding these studies. And when you stop and you see who's funding the studies, whether the scientists or these researchers serve on the speakers' bureaus of Big Food or Big Pharma, you're able as a citizen, as one of our nation's 300 million eaters, to make an informed choice when it comes to weighing the opinion of these scientific experts. Because as I highlight in Chapter 7 of The Unhealthy Truth, who is funding the research has a direct correlation with how that research, the outcome of it.
My guest is Robin O'Brien, who's written with the help of Rachel Krantz, The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. It's published by Broadway Books. Looking at specific foods, you warn against the danger of soy. I always thought that soy was a healthy food.
You know, you're not alone, because most of us did. As I share in the book, I certainly ate my fair share of it during the pregnancies. And what's amazing is that as I present in Chapter 3, which is called Soy Secrets, it's a double-edged sword. And so it's not going to affect everybody the same way, obviously. What is interesting, what I found particularly strong, was that most of us were unaware that the American Heart Association withdrew its support of soy a few years ago. There was much fanfare around the support that it gave to soy when it initially came out. But again, you step back and you realize what a large industry this here is in the U.S. and the power that these industries have legislatively, the relationship that they have with leaders in our government, and how, you know, we've seen similar parallels, I think, with the financial industry and the deregulation that occurred there. The same thing has happened in the food system.
Well, we wind up with this odd situation where soy is an alternative to dairy products, and you're saying dairy products sometimes should be mistrusted. And the same thing is true with soy milk, I guess, and soy ice cream and all those other soy things.
Yeah, and what is interesting is that one of the most renowned and one of the most trusted names in the pediatric space is Dr. Sears. And as I highlight in Chapter 3 of The Unhealthy Truth, he is the one that was calling out back in the 1990s that we should exert extreme caution when introducing this to children. And so, again, recognizing that I'm not a scientist, throughout the book I turn to scientists and experts. I disclose their funding ties. I disclose the funding ties of the ones that are telling us that it's safe, so that readers can make an informed choice when it comes to feeding their children.
Now, what about food labeling? Aren't there all sorts of indications as to whether something might be healthy or not healthy?
Again, I think that depends on the marketing perspective.
You know, now, for example, you get a food, a milk in the supermarket or any product, ice cream, doesn't really matter what, and it tells you on the side how much fat it has, what supposedly what went into the making of the product.
Absolutely. And I think especially with milk, one of the key concerns is the introduction of this synthetic hormone in 1994. It's injected into cows in order to enhance their lactating profitability. And as a financial analyst, I get the importance of that. However, it also shortens the lifespans of the cows, and it makes them incredibly sick, requiring increased antibiotic use, which is why governments around the world, from Canada, across Europe, UK, Japan, Australia, decided not to introduce it into their food supply in 1994. On top of that, the introduction of that synthetic hormone also elevates hormone levels in the blood that are linked to breast, prostate, and colon cancer. And when you stop and you look at the American Cancer Society statistics that show that the U.S. has the highest rates of cancer of any country in the world, and that migration studies show that if you were to move here from somewhere like Japan, your likelihood of developing cancer increases fourfold. These are stunning statistics. And so I stepped back again and I said, okay, 1 out of 8 women has breast cancer, and only 1 out of 10 of those cases are genetic, which means that 9 out of 10 of them are environmental. We can do a lot to control the health of our families and help inspire and improve change.
Now, a listener called in to ask me to emphasize that you're not a scientist and wonders where you get all your facts and how well is the book documented.
I would love to send that listener a copy of the book because, as he or she will see, the endnotes include about 60 to 70 endnotes for each chapter. I have turned to scientists and researchers around the world. I absolutely am not a scientist. My background is finance, and I think to highlight the who is funding the research, whether or not these doctors serve on the Speakers Bureau. Another stunning revelation that I learned was that a lot of the doctors that are telling us not to worry our little heads about this stuff have actually invented patents, and so they have royalty and revenue streams, you know, coming in from all different places.
You said that you were faced by lawsuits. Are those the people who are threatening to sue you?
No, not lawsuits. I've just received, you know, some interesting legal letters and have been contacted by different associations.
And where is that resistance coming from mostly?
Well, as you can read in the story, there's a pretty entrenched food allergy world and network that's been in place for the last 15 to 20 years. And that was from, you know, one piece. The Corn Refiners Association sent an interesting letter in response to an op-ed piece that I wrote to Michelle Obama called Dear Michelle, you know, Mother in Charge, because when you stop and you realize that 17.6% of our GDP is being devoured by healthcare costs, that 1 in 3 kids has autism, ADHD, allergies, or asthma, that 1 in 2 African American, 1 in 2 Hispanic, and 1 in 3 Caucasian kids born in the year 2000, which is my daughter's third grade class, are expected to be insulin dependent, according to the CDC, by the time they reach adulthood, there's a tremendous burden being placed on our healthcare system by these children.
My guest is Robin O'Brien, who's written with the help of Rachel Kranz, The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. It's published by Broadway Books. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. I'm talking to Robin O'Brien, who's the founder of Allergy Kids and the author with Rachel Kranz of The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It, published by Broadway Books. We've been talking about allergies, and your group is called Allergy Kids, but you also bring up asthma and eczema as part of the problem.
Interestingly, because those are allergic symptoms of an allergic reaction, and as I turn to, again, I'm not a scientist, and so I did seek the counsel and advice of some of the world's leading scientists who are so full of integrity, and they disclose funding ties if they do have them. And my preference, obviously, is for doctors that are independently funded. And one of those people is Dr. Kenneth Bach. He is also a Random House author. He's written Healing the New Childhood Epidemics, Allergies, Autism, ADHD, and Asthma. He does a brilliant job of articulating the science behind this internally, what's going on in a child's body, and how these symptoms are a part of an underlying problem. And he refers to these children in the introduction as canaries in the coal mine, and the fact that their systems and their bodies truly are crying out for help.
27% of children with food allergies have eczema. Is that true?
Where did you find that statistic?
Well, it was provided to me by my crack staff. I don't know where they got it. It says less than 10% of children without allergies have eczema.
Right. I mean, eczema is often a sign of an underlying food allergy, as Dr. Bach discloses in his book, and I highlight in mine.
Well, the CDC does point out 30% of children with food allergies have asthma as well. So maybe that's a CDC statistic. It is, in fact. What about Allergy Kids? How did it start?
Well, you know, it started simply because as I first learned about the food allergy world and the space and the fact that these children had become so pervasive, I hadn't been sensitive to it. My gut reaction was, how am I going to protect this little girl in my own house with these three older siblings that can't read yet, much less when she gets to preschool? And I felt that there needed to be a pink ribbon to help identify and protect these kids. And so I designed this bright green octagon. It was kind of like the Mr. Yuck that we had when we were children. And felt that it would be a good way to raise awareness and raise resources. You know, what was interesting was that the entrenched food allergy world sort of had an allergic reaction to me. And it was in that I began to pull their financial statements and learn that they had been funded by corporations, you know, that may have an entrenched interest in not fully disclosing all information.
When you say the entrenched allergy world, you're talking about FAAN, aren't you?
Yes, I share that in the book, yes.
The Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, which is probably the biggest group. I would have thought that they would have seen you as a natural ally.
I did. I donated products to their cause and wrote checks, but they did not see me as a natural ally, which at the time was a bit disconcerting. But now, in hindsight, I'm very grateful because it did lead me to a much bigger story.
Well, why do you think that they have been opposed to you? Is it simply a turf war, or are you arguing something very different from what they're arguing?
I don't know. That would be a great question to ask them.
And that's the answer?
Well, I don't know. I had reached out to them multiple times, and I never got an answer. I felt that there would be massive collaboration between the two, and in trying to raise money for their interest, it was my heart's work, and to have received the reaction that I did was incredibly hard initially. However, again, you know, with four small children, and then to learn what I learned, the fact that these chemicals and these additives are not included in the products that mothers are buying overseas, that our corporations like Kraft and Coca-Cola and Walmart, they formulate their products differently for parents overseas, and to learn that a box of mac and cheese does not contain these same ingredients in the grocery stores and on the shelves overseas, I felt that this truly is a social justice issue. And so why do we have to ask them to reinvent the wheel? We simply are asking that they provide those same products on the grocery store shelves here in the U.S.
What specifically have they included in mac and cheese that you wouldn't find in other countries?
Well, I think a perfect example is yellow number 5. Yellow number 5, there's studies, and they're just a handful of studies, but they are independently funded studies. There's full disclosure as to who is funding a lot of the research overseas. And what these studies revealed, as I highlight in Chapter 6, which is called True Colors, out of Australia and out of the UK, that yellow number 5 was linked to hyperactivity in children. And because of that, Kraft, Coca-Cola, Walmart, our American corporations have moved voluntarily ahead of legislation in the UK to remove yellow number 5, aspartame, and some of these other ingredients from the products overseas. And again, this is, you know, as I share in Chapter 6, there were amazing quotes that come out of Kraft UK and Coca-Cola UK and how they're just absolutely addressing the concerns of the mothers and the fathers overseas.
You've received support from Aaron Brockovich, Nell Newman, Bobby Kennedy. Are they doing similar kinds of work?
They absolutely are. Nell has been visionary in her work to really help provide affordable, clean, less chemical food to families. She's brought that whole movement very mainstream. Erin has been phenomenal in her support. Most people are unaware that she actually lost her brother to an allergic reaction when he was 37 years old. And so she was very grateful for the work that I have put into this space, the integrity, the disclosure, the transparency that I'm calling for. And again, you know, to really parallel it to the financial system and how we deregulated our financial system, there was not a lot of transparency, not a lot of disclosure, and it really kind of deregulated itself almost into oblivion. The same thing is happening in the food system. In November of 2007, the FDA issued a report in which they simply stated that American lives are at risk. And when you fund the FDA, you look at the fact that the Pentagon received $600 billion for its 2009 budget, and yet the FDA only received $2.4 billion. They simply do not have the money to conduct independent research, so they are relying on industry-funded research. And it's just woefully underfunded, and it's in dire shape.
Isn't part of the problem here that we really don't know how to detect allergies? One doctor says, David Fleischer, the only true test of whether you're allergic to a food or not is to whether you can eat it and not react to it. So many of the false positives have come from blood tests, which may be unreliable because they fail to distinguish between similar proteins in different foods. So a child who's allergic to peanuts might test positive for allergies to soy, green beans, peas, and kidney beans. And children with milk allergies may test positive for beef allergy.
Right. And because those tests don't exist, governments around the world said this has never been proven safe, therefore we don't want it in our food supply. Here in the U.S., we say it's never been proven dangerous, we'll put it into our food supply. They just take a much more precautious approach overseas, and we don't here.
Mm-hmm. Can people outgrow allergies?
Definitely. And that, in healing the new childhood epidemics, that's Dr. Bach's entire thesis.
How does he say you do that?
He takes the immune system and the fact that 70% of a child's immune system, or an adult for that matter, is found in their gastrointestinal tract. And by removing chemicals and toxins from the child's system, it pulls those chemicals back out of those pipes and allows those pipes to heal, which, you know, the parallel is that they've been chemically corroded. And so he really works on healing a child from the inside out.
My guest is Robin O'Brien, who's written with Rachel Kranz, The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food Is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It, published by Broadway Books. You recommend that readers work to adopt the 80-20 rule, which works for your family. What is that?
I think it is so important to not make the perfect the enemy of the good. And I understand the budget crunch. I have four children. They're picky eaters, limited budget, no time. But I also had to trust that I could do more than hit 200 start on that microwave. And so as we moved into this, because we didn't always eat this way, I was the mom in Costco slinging the blue yogurt into the grocery store cart. I suddenly realized I couldn't make the perfect the enemy of the good. And so I would strive to do a good job 80% of the time and recognize that the other 20% of the time, these kids are going to go to birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese or get a blue cupcake in school. And so by introducing that balance, again, it was something that was attainable to me. And as I highlight to the readers, it may be 50-50, it may be 10-90 initially. Do whatever you can do to be flexible. Nell, you know, uses the term, which is a great one, flexitarianism. And I think the 80-20 rule really introduces that.
One of the things you address in your appendix is something we've discussed a lot, which is the different meanings of the word organic that we will find in the supermarket.
Absolutely. And again, you know, recognizing that there are different standards, and some of them are actually by law, and some of them are actually used more for marketing benefit. And in the appendix, I do go through what it means to be USDA organic certified for produce, for meat, for fish, for shellfish, where, you know, it's worth the extra money if you do have to invest in it, or where you are able to eat more conventional produce. I think what's interesting, again, to step back and look at this from a financial perspective, is that we subsidize the crops that are being grown with all of the chemicals, and yet at the same time, we charge a fee to the organic farmers to prove that their crops are safe, and then on top of that, they're charged another fee to then label it. And as I stepped back and I thought, what do they call organic food around the world? They simply call it food. And the labeling has to go on to the crops that are engineered with the chemicals.
What will people who have severe reactions to food, what should they do? Do they just simply eat that food? Stop eating that food? Or are there other things that they can do?
Well, as I highlight in the book, I mean, that was, as we were first diagnosed with food allergies in our family, the response I got from the doctor was, exactly that. You can either avoid the food in the hopes that you outgrow it, or you can introduce your child to small amounts in the hope that she outgrows it.
Mm-hmm. Or builds up a resistance.
Right. And because there is no conclusive, there's no testing that is conclusive either way, you know, it's a diagnosis that's incredibly hard to deal with as a mother.
Now, it started off with your daughter having a reaction to eggs. How common is an allergy to eggs these days?
Again, the statistics are incredibly outdated. You know, some of the facts that I am able to highlight is that from 1997 to 2002, there was a doubling of the peanut allergy. If you extrapolate that out, that shows a 20% increase in the rate of peanut allergy per year over that five-year period. Again, the statistics haven't been calculated by the CDC. There is no funding that's going into the studies to know exactly what those numbers might be.
And why do you think that is? I mean, there has been a political climate over the past few years that would have seen any funding for that sort of research as being anti-business, but the attitude seems to have changed a bit in Washington. Are we still seeing a lot of resistance?
No, fortunately, things are really beginning to change. Actually, there was just a study yesterday highlighting an environmental study and the role that that might be playing in conditions such as asthma. There's another National Institute of Health study on, it's going to be a 21-year study on environmental contributions to these chronic conditions. And again, when you step back and you realize that almost half of the U.S. population is struggling under some form of chronic disease, it really merits all of us to address this because of the tremendous burden that not only are these health conditions placing on our family and on corporations, but on the economy as a whole. One of the things that I like to highlight is that in the New York Times recently, it was reported that Starbucks spends more on healthcare costs than they do on coffee. Again, this is something that we do need to address as a country.
If people want more information, how do they get in touch with Allergy Kids?
There's allergykids.com, which is very specific to that particular issue. But then at robinobrien.com, that really allows the reader to have more access to the information as it expands in the book and The Unhealthy Truth. And The Unhealthy Truth is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Borders.
And Robin is spelled R-O-B-Y-N, Robin O'Brien, with Rachel Kranz, The Unhealthy Truth, published by Broadway Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.